Hello everyone and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project in collaboration with SocianWorks, a global forum helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformation. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, the economy, and policy, and they're reframing how we build for resilient futures. Today, we're examining the ways that dynamic systems of information, incentives, and interaction are reshaping societal systems of governance and network orchestration. Traditional boundaries and operating norms are being updated. They're being replaced with ecosystemic models, our new economic engines for the digital era. I'm your host, Marco Annunziata, co-founder of Annunziata and Desai Advisors. I'm the former chief economist and head of business innovation strategy at General Electric, and my expertise lies at the intersection of economic trends with technology and innovation. I'm joined today by Donna Arias. Dr. Arias is a global executive leader with over 25 years of expertise and proven success in customized organizational design and implementation, transformation, change, management initiatives, and stakeholder engagement. She has worked with organizations of all sizes to identify opportunities to redefine and enrich organizational health and performance. Dr. Arias, welcome to the Ecosystemic Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Marco. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited, actually, about the interest in the type of work that I've been doing for decades. So thank you again for having me.
I think it's really fascinating. So in fact, I gave a brief introduction, but I don't know if there is anything more you want to tell our audience about your background.
So I've been working with organizations both internally as an internal consultant and leader, as well as externally as a consultant. I have a PhD in organizational management with focus on leadership and change. I am trying to hone in my baking skills right now in my private life. I've got a mean pie crust made, and that's pretty much it. I live in the mountains, and I hike on a daily basis. So that's a little bit about me, and I love the work I do. You'll hear it in the passion in what we present and talk about today. So thank you, Marco.
Thank you again. Your passion for baking is particularly inspiring. We should find an opportunity to exchange notes because I've developed a passion for baking bread. So it sounds like we might be collaborators and complementary, not competitors. So we'll find an opportunity to discuss that as well. But let's get to the core of your passion and your mission. So why don't you tell us, first of all, you focus a lot on organizational health. What is organizational health and how do we think about it?
So it's interesting with organizational health. It's really, if you think about, we'll talk about performance somewhere later on, but organizational health really enables the organization to retain and reach its full potential. So what it does is it's about rallying everyone in the organization, everyone from frontline leaders and employees all the way up to senior managers. It's really regardless of structure and role. And it also includes partners internally and externally. So if you think about the organization, it's not so much about the structure. It's more about how an organization operates. So you all know that you've worked in organizations and how you're structured isn't really how processes or it functions. So it's really about creating this shared experience, and that's tied to a mission, vision, goals, values that drive efficiency and operational excellence. So if you think about everything from motivation to how work gets performed, that encompasses org health. And what's interesting about org health is organizations that focus on healthy organizational work really outperform their peers in the marketplace. McKinsey did research years ago, and they showed that it was 3 times. So they outperform. And if you think about that, if everyone understands what is our mission, what is our vision, and they're aligned to it in their daily work, and you see, I'd always take this visual, birds in the sky and how birds shift and move. If you can do that with an organization, you can be more dynamic. And as we've gotten to a point with technology, it's making us more dynamic. We have to be more dynamic. Boundaries are blurred. So being able to move on a dime from one strategy to the next strategy and be dynamic is really key to the success of an organization. So you'll see this across industries. So like a lot of, you know, financial industries tend to be very dynamic in how they work, whereas a more government or educational tend to be a little bit more conservative and lacking. So that's pretty much in a nutshell how healthy organizations work. So Marco, did that answer your question?
It does. It's an excellent introduction. It gives me a lot of food for thought and lots of threads that I would like to start pulling with you a bit.
Okay. So
first one is if you're running So if you're within an organization, so I'm saying if you're running an organization, what are the first critical steps you should be taking to make it a healthy organization was my first question. And as I was formulating it, I realized that, of course, there is more to it, right? Because it's not, cannot just be coming from the top, but the healthy organization behavior has to be percolating through the organization and the different layers of the organization. So what are the first steps? If I'm running an organization, I want it to be healthy and therefore high performing. How do I start?
Well, as a leader or within anyone, any role, so within an organizational health is a shared responsibility. You'll see that many people in organizations put it in HR or they put it in senior leadership, but in fact, it belongs to all of us. And I always tell employees in the organization or leaders that we design and create the culture we want to work in. We can have a healthy culture just by establishing different things. So let's take a look apart and let's look at what leaders would do. So if I'm a leader in the organization, so you can basically take responsibility for a role modeling, organizational health, new behaviors. So if you've got the vision and mission, and it always starts at that point, how does your work or your department's work align to that mission, vision, and values? And how do you role model that in daily actions, or how do you carry out those types of departmental aspirations that align to organizational health? How do you develop an action plan so that you can make sure that you're feeling you're aligned to performance and organizational health? And how do you drive that within your team? There's three things that I have learned in organizational health over my career. It's based on relationships. So you'll see many things in the media that say, people leave organizations for their manager. I mean, if their manager or their leader isn't the right, they're having problems with it, they'll be more apt to leave. So as a leader, it's really important that you connect with your employees. And what I find is employees and everyone in an organization, there's three things that you need. You need to be heard, number one. Number two, you need a sense of belonging. And the third is going to make everybody squirm a little bit. Everybody wants to be cared for or be loved. And I know that sounds really strange, but if you have those three things, I belong, I'm being heard, and I have a sense of care or love for that, that's going to create a relationship that's going to strengthen, regardless if it's a manager or an employee or it's peers or it's partners. It's those three things that really are the glue to the relationship. So if you can do those three things in your role on a day-to-day and choose how to react to things that may be not so good in a positive manner, you can create a healthy organization at your level. So I look at organizations, what can individuals control? What can leaders control? What can managers of people control? What can colleagues and partners? So what can the teams do or projects or partners do? So you can engage in feedback. You can build relationships, really get to know people, role model. What are the organization's healthy behaviors or values, and then support, be supportive. Those are the things that we can do across the organization. And then as a leader, you can also coach. So Marco, I hope that answered that question.
It does. It can go very deep.
So
no, it does. And you know, actually, it immediately triggers a follow-up, which is the following. When you started answering, my mind went to an organization's mission. But a lot of what you've been saying, especially the need for people to feel heard, valued, cared for, loved, it speaks a lot more to the sense of team building and collaboration and essentially caring for each other within an organization. So the question is a company's mission critical to this, or can an organization be very healthy even if there isn't really an overarching mission beyond that of surviving as an entity and making sufficient money?
Well, it is interesting. The organizations that I've worked with that have been extremely healthy all align to the vision and mission and the purpose. Everybody knows that their work is tied to that. What it does is it gives a sense of purpose. Regardless if the organization is financially driven, every organization's financially driven. Let's just get that out there right now. Even nonprofits are driven to a certain degree by finance. Let's just put that is there. But the key to this is every organization tends to, if they have a purpose, then everybody's aligned to that purpose and it has a meaning. And I know that there's been a lot of studies in the last decades about having purposeful work. And that's what brings people together in a healthy, dynamic organization, is if we can have strong leadership, we can have strong vision and mission, we have effective communication, because relationships are based on effective communication, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's collaboration. And the collaboration really promotes teamwork, mutual respect, and organizational health at the base of it. And so it also ties to employees' well-being. And that is key. That's key to this. And I know I've gone all over the place, Marco, but it is a big subject.
That's exactly the way that the conversation should be. Because, so Donna, let's talk. You started already earlier when you were quoting a McKinsey study, but I'm curious to get a bit deeper into the details. So what are the main proof points of organizational health being reflected both in better health and performance for the individuals and better performance for the companies themselves?
So the link ties together. So the performance component of, and I hope I'm capturing what you're trying to get out here, is the performance is about how do we make things, build things, what are the services we provide? And then the organization is how we align to it, how do we execute, and how do we renew ourselves continually? So when you have performance and health, it's those links together actually can help alignment towards that overall vision. It's more along how the organization is, what value we create, and how do we run the place, or how do we run the organization? And then the aspects of it is innovation. How do I adapt to change and that constant evolution that's going on? And I know many organizations right now are trying to keep up with the change and being dynamic. And so you set up the culture so that you can be that dynamic. And the next question is, Marco, is how do we measure that? So how do we know?
Exactly what I was going to ask.
so this is culture is very funny, because it's like, and I'm going to start, here's the other thing. I don't know what it is about love today, but maybe we need love in the world right now. But we know a healthy culture. We know it. We see it. We feel it. Sometimes it's hard to articulate what it is, right? It's like being in love. You know it, you see it, and you can feel it, but you can't really define the components of it. Mm-hmm. So I hope I didn't make anybody uncomfortable or I made people giggle out there. That's good. So when there is a way that you can measure, and I've worked with a lot of organizations that have done measurement. And I know that McKinsey's done a lot of work on organizational health measurements. Many of, like I said, many of the organizations that I've worked with, we've actually measured the culture. We've actually measured how we do these things. And they are quite different than the measuring employee satisfaction. So you can look at when you start to measure or figure out what you want to measure for organizational health. And these things can be everything from accountability, direction, coordination, control, the work environment, motivational aspects of it, external orientation, how are we working with partners? So you develop questions that align to those healthy outcomes that would be, how does work get done? Are my employees motivated? What are our capabilities? How adaptivity are we? And then you begin to measure that at a very large structure. So you could have a survey that's done that ties into, I know with McKinsey, it was over 100 questions. And it really does set the baseline of measuring organizational health. But there's only one key component of it. So you measure it, but how do you continually tell if your organization is getting stronger or healthier? And so with organizational health, it's something that happens over long term. It's not something that just fluctuates in the short term. So you can't just measure it and say, oh, we're going to do these three or four things and it's going to make the organizational healthy. It actually takes longer to do that. So when you look to measure organizational health, you do it probably at every 12 to 24 months. And then you do what I've done in the past is pulse questions. You identify when you look at your organizational health and you say, these are the areas, like I want to talk about motivation or innovation could be components that we want to dig into deeper. Or these are our strengths might be our capabilities and accountabilities. Why are we doing these things well? You go and explore that a little bit further with workshops and you dig deeper. If there's an area around motivation, you dig into that a little bit more. And that is another area. So creating those deeper dives via workshops with employees, leaders can take that information and develop action plans. And then we can begin to measure those action plans over time to see if those components or those initiatives actually make a difference and make the organization healthy.
With an action plan like this and ways of measuring what you're actually trying to implement, so there is a rigor to the exercise. Well, first question that comes to mind is, so with this methodology, any organization, any industry can aim to become healthier. But in your experience, have you seen that there are specific sectors of the economy or industries from finance to manufacturing to media to technology that tend to be where organizations tend to be healthier than in others? Or is it more scattered all over the place?
Well, that's a great question because I get that a lot, actually. People are like, well, tell me about finance. Tell me about manufacturing. What I find is with organizational health, every culture is different. And so their components, I worked with a financial organization, a global financial organization, and they were really struggling, really, really struggling. In fact, it was really bad. And I came in and I was supposed to be there for a few months just to help them. And I was there for 3.5 years, not saying that that's why they need me. The value that I added really helped them. What we did was we onboarded a new C-suite, new CEO. But the cool thing about it is we did a new vision, mission, and values. And then we did the alignment of the employees, global employees from across all cultures together. We brought them all together. Now they're one of the healthiest money financial organizations in the world. It's now I started that work with them in 2017, and now they're at the top of their game. So the organization, people are thrilled to be working there. It's really positive. And so when I left that organization to go to another organization in education, I used similar components because their culture was similar. So I found that it doesn't mean the finance culture is one way, manufacturing culture is a different way. There are things that are cross-industry that I have found, and you can always bring different components of that together.
You just brought into the conversation another aspect, which I think is very, very interesting. So, and I'm curious, is it easier to create organizational health, to bolster organizational health in a company which is, say, purely domestic, so with operations contained within one single country, compared to organizations which are global and have employees from different cultures scattered all over the world? Or what are the different challenges?
So the answer is, yeah, domestic is easier if it's just in North America. I've worked in both. Globally, you have to look at the cultures that you bring in. In the United States, we're very I-centric. And what that means is I'm very me-focused. Whereas if you work with an organization or employees that are in like Guatemala, you'll see that they are the highest collaborative country in the world. And it's just the different dynamics of it. So when you work globally and you work across different organizations, so you even if you're an organization internally and you have, you know, structure across the globe, you've still got that common umbrella that we all have that mission and vision and values tied together. So we're all working towards the same objectives. When you've got different values and missions, and you're working globally across with partners, that is very dynamic and that is very difficult because everybody's marching to a different drum, so to speak. And what I found, especially with project teams, because a lot of organizations have gone into project type work and so, or program type work, where we're going to do X type program and it's going to include these different partners. Employees within an organization, it's going to be cross. I'm going to do something in Scotland or Australia or even in Northern Africa. How do we function? So what I recommend is we have overall shared vision and mission values. Why don't we do that with our project work as well? When you create that shared meaning, regardless of how I'm being compensated or my performance is being looked at, if I am working towards something that is cross or for the program, it's going to be healthier. You're going to have less tension in that space.
Excellent. And, you know, another issue I wonder about is the impact of technology, because we are now in a situation, actually we've been for several years now in a situation where technological innovation is accelerating almost across the board, and gradually new technologies are being incorporated in all different sorts of industries. And there is a lot of discussion about this, a lot of anxiety also about the impact of technologies like robotics, like artificial intelligence. These are all technological solutions that can bring to organizations a lot more efficiency and therefore more productivity and therefore higher profits. But from the workforce standpoint, they can also be disruptive because workers have to, employees have to get used to operating with different technologies and also under the fear sometimes of unemployment, because there is a lot of talk about the potential for automation. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, how have you seen this relation of technological innovation impact organizational health, and what are the best ways of handling it?
That is a great question, and I think that one is the big one right now, because there's a lot of fear on employees' perspectives on how do we use AI, how does technology work. It's interesting. I find that sometimes the biggest fear is about how am I supposed to operate or behave with a new technology? How am I supposed to work with that? Or I'll give you a simple one. Cameras on or cameras off on Zoom meetings. I mean, that's a big one. So what I found is when I worked with project teams, working norms and using technology and working with projects. So if we're going to say, you know, during our meetings, we're going to use Zoom and everybody's going to go on cameras and everybody's going to be focused. That's our working norm. And how do we hold each other accountable for that? That creates a healthy organization. How do we communicate when there's tension in the room? How do we do that? The other thing is when you look at things that are fearful, like AI, how do we use it? So what are the good things? And actually have open discussion about it. How is the organization going to handle it? And not so much organizational wide, but even within projects and teams or within your own work, you know, what is acceptable? What is not acceptable? I know that in universities right now, they're really stretching with the AI. Can students use AI to do papers and research? Can they not? So what are the boundaries? The basics of it is, how as an organization do we want to use the technology and have open dialogue about it? That's the key component of it, Marco.
It is. It is actually, I find it especially important, Donna, because from the work I've done on artificial intelligence, the development and the applications of artificial intelligence, it's becoming clearer and clearer to me that the greatest value of this kind of technology comes from the collaboration between the technology and humans. And right. So creating a situation where employees are actually incentivized to feel more comfortable with the technology and embracing it as opposed to fearing it as a potential competitor, I think are especially crucial to companies' performance. And it's not an easy one, because naturally when you talk to investors or some CEOs, sometimes the first temptation is to think in terms of automation, because you want your profits to go up, you want your share price to go up, and that's natural. And reducing costs is a very clear way of doing it, and reducing the headcount can be a tempting way to do it. But long-term, the best value seems to be coming really from the strongest collaboration of human talent and, in this case, artificial intelligence. So getting that piece right, I think, through organizational health can be tremendously powerful.
I agree. I very much agree. I think the fear also comes from the unknown. You know, what is AI going to, is it going to take my job? Is it going to take my thought process? But I really look at it as it aids to critical thinking. And as individuals, that critical thinking component is probably the most important. How do we use that to help us better? And the other thing that I found is people are afraid to make mistakes. Fear of learning. And so when I look at failure seems to be a big thing in organizations right now when it comes to AI. And I don't know if you've seen this, Marco, but people are afraid, oh my gosh, if I fail or I make the wrong choice or make the wrong decision, I always look at it as first attempt at learning. And so AI can really help us, and technology can really help us with that. And if we change our mindsets on how we look at it and how we use those tools and those resources to help us become stronger, we actually learn a lot. We learn a lot as humans.
Yeah, I agree completely with you. I think this is the most important priority. It also brings to mind another curiosity, which is the following. The technological disruption is only one of the forces that are changing the workplace and the way we work. Another element is the attitude that new generations have to work, but also the economic conditions and therefore the ups and downs in the labor market and demand for jobs. And sometimes you see articles or studies indicating that we are entering a situation in which there is more churn in the labor force. And I think that's definitely true if we look back 50 years when more people used to spend their entire career into a single company. Mm-hmm. And now there are arguments saying that we're going to the opposite extreme, where nobody really joins the workforce thinking that they will stay in the same company for the rest of their lives, and people actually prefer to change jobs more quickly. Now, intuitively, I would tend to think that stability of the workforce should be helpful to organizational health, whereas organizational health might be more difficult to achieve if I'm in a situation where employees are constantly quitting and coming in, quitting and coming in. Is that right or am I wrong?
You are. Again, it goes to the culture, it goes to the environment, it goes to the health of the organization. So if employees are turning over a lot, you'll see a lot of toxic environments, a lot of toxic cultures. If there's a lot of people leaving and coming and going, if there's a fear of layoffs or, you know, positions being eliminated, that sort of thing, that sets fear and tone in the organization. Even the employees that are staying there have that sense of fear. So it always creates that. And it makes it a little bit more uncomfortable. So when you measure organizational health, knowing those things, knowing that that's what's happening right now, the dynamics of it, when you look at your org health numbers and you look at your over time and you see that they are stable and people feel really good and you dig a little bit deeper, then you have a healthy culture. If you see organizations that are starting to dip in their health numbers, you go, ooh, we need action plans. We need to do something. When you have that situation where there's a lot of heavy turnover, a lot of layoffs and things like that, and the numbers are going up, that's another sign that the culture is not that good because employees are fearful to say anything. They're fearful, so they want to make it look good. So you have to really diagnose and look at things a little bit deeper. It's not just on organizational health. It's not just looking at a number and saying, oh, great, we're at a 75. We're doing really well. It's not about that. It's not about a number. It's about what is going on in the organization at that time. When I joined, like you, Marco, when I joined the workforce, employees stayed for, you know, 30 plus years, retired at senior level, and then, you know, went off to do retirement. And now you'll see the churn, and it's happening on both sides. A lot of employees are leaving and turning over, but also organizations are turning over employees quite a bit. And so it's going both ways, and it's creating this cycle of just uncertainty. And what I tell leaders, because also leaders are fearful of this as well, it's not just employees, is to add value every single day in your work. I know in my own career, I have never joined an organization and said, I'm going to be there for the next 25 years. I have joined an organization, add value, and then I know when time comes, I'm going to move on. I'm going to either move on or the organization is not going to need me any longer. And that's a beautiful thing. It's not fearful. It's more about how do we continue to add value and add experiences in other organizations. So it's a mindset. So if employees have the mindset where I'm adding value in the work I'm doing every single day, leaders do that. If the organization chooses to go in a different direction, you can walk away with a positive aspect. I did my best. And I know that sounds a little sunshine and flowers, but it's really a good place to be.
No, it is. And I think it points also to the importance of creating almost an optimal balance in the sense that I feel from what you're telling me that a healthy organization is an organization where while I'm working there, I'm feeling perfectly well adjusted, perfectly happy working in kind of collaborating in harmony with my colleagues. And I feel aligned with the company's mission. And I will probably feel at the time like I would never leave. But it's a normal stage of life, as a normal stage of a career. So the time will come when I will feel that, okay, I've given enough. And now actually I can add more value somewhere else. And I can improve myself. I can learn more by grabbing a new opportunity. So it feels like the healthy level is almost like growing up, right? There is a time when you're perfectly adjusted with your family and a time when you start spreading your wings and moving off and doing something different.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, there was a study, gosh, I can't even, it was like decades ago, where someone actually aligned organizations to how humans actually grow as well. You know, entrepreneurial tends to be very like they're new, everything's dynamic, it's changing. You go into your childhood, it's still a little dynamic. It's chaos when you're going from, you know, your childhood into your adulthood in that whole teen. So you can see the mature organizations, like the big organizations that have been around for 50, 60 years, you know, it's a different perspective, different employee environment.
We touched on some of the issues that arise in companies that have a toxic culture where clearly things are not going well. And again, instinctively, I tend to think that in companies like those, certainly management is either not realizing what is going on, blind to it, or doesn't particularly care. And my question is, what leads an organization to realize that there is something wrong in the way they operate and something wrong that requires the intervention and the guidance of somebody like you? What leads them to the dawning discovery and realization that, hey, we are unhealthy as an organization, we should do something about it?
When they start to see that there's different components. It could be, you know, profits are down, employee turnover is high, you get your work health surveys come back that are poor. You could just see people are fearful. You can also see the component of no collaboration. There's so many dynamics that you can look at. It's funny, I can tell numerous conversations where I've had with leaders that have said, I've gone in there and said, your organization is not healthy. You know, I've used different tones and different words, but I've had some that say, no, you're wrong. You're completely wrong, Donna. You don't know what you're talking about. Thank you very much. I move on. Others who've also said, you know what? I don't agree with that. I think those are wrong. And then they come back a couple of days later after they've thought about it and go, you are right. You're right. Help me. And then there's others that have said, I had no idea. What can we do to make this stronger? So it's everybody's functioning at a different level. Everybody's functioning in their role. You know, they're almost siloed to a certain degree. But the one thing that I do tell leaders is leaders are the link. And I'm gonna go through this twice because I think it's important. Leaders foster the environment. They actually create the environment, and the environment shapes the behaviors, and then the behaviors create the culture, and the culture drives the results. That's the link there. So I'll do that again. Leaders foster or create the environment. And how do you do that? You create the environment that's healthy. The environment shapes the behaviors where employees feel good. They feel comfortable. I know how to behave. The behaviors create the culture. I know how to behave. I know what I need to do in my role, working with my team, collaboration. And then the culture drives the results. And everywhere that I've worked with leaders to do those elements, they have had healthy organizations because the leaders commit to, you know, they commit to that performance and organizational health link. They adopt the mindset towards that. And then the employees have that ability to engage. They have that ability to be part of the organization. Those fears drop off. People begin to perform. They begin to do things that, you know, they have clarity of their skills. They are collaborating. They're having tough conversations, but they still have mutual respect.
That's an excellent way of describing it. And it's almost an excellent note on which to end our fascinating conversation, except I want to give you the chance, Donna. Is there anything we have not covered, anything that you think our audience should know and take away from our conversation?
Thank you, Marco. Yes, one thing. We create the cultures we want to work in. So I ask each of you, everyone that's listening to this, as I appreciate you doing that, is to really think about what can you control in your work that will help you be happier and healthier and add value every day to the work you do, to the customers you support, to the teams that you work with. What can you do in your own day-to-day to make the work environment healthier?
It's really, really excellent. And I would say, you know, for me, the takeaway from our conversation is that every company, if it's not doing it already, should really take the time to do an assessment of the health of its organization along the lines that we've discussed, because it's too easy to miss danger signs or to discount them. And as you've pointed out, it's something that is, you know, organizational health is something that is critical to employees' broadly defined health and therefore productivity and therefore to company performance. And it's something that is measured in studies out there. So it's really something that the company executives should focus on and take very seriously. Donna, Dr. Arias, this has been such a pleasure, such a great conversation. Thank you so much for coming onto our podcast. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Marco. And I know we bounced all over the place, and organizational health is much deeper. There's a lot more dynamics to it. So I know we barely touched the surface. We were on the surfboard paddling. So thank you, Marco.
We barely scratched the surface, and we may have to revisit and go deeper. And thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Please do check out this season's new episodes as we explore the convergence of innovation, technology, and refactored business models, and how this convergence is reshaping industry and what it means for our ecosystemic futures. Follow us, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite place to access podcasts is, and you can always learn more or apply to be a guest speaker at socialworks.com. Thank you again.